they're looking at shutting down our fishery here. Idiotic. And an abuse of the Endangered Species Act.
Alaska's congressional delegation files an amicus brief in federal court in an attempt to protect Southeast Alaska's troll fishery. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, March 10th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Tuliksak has been without running water for about a month. Relief is coming, but it's not clear when.
Hopefully we will receive that. That's coming by past mail. You never know out in the village when they'll actually deliver it, but it's on its way.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The future looks bright because the University of Alaska is on a mission to empower Alaska. From drone piloting to vital climate research to critical mining solutions, the University of Alaska's three universities and their community campuses shape the jobs and careers that fuel the economy, creating a more empowered Alaska for all. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
There is no announcement yet from the Biden administration about the fate of Willow, an oil drilling project ConocoPhillips proposes in the National Petroleum Reserve. Bloomberg reported this afternoon that the administration has decided to approve the massive Arctic development and that an announcement is coming next week. Bloomberg's story is based on two unnamed sources said to be familiar with the matter. The White House told reporters no decision has been made yet. Willow would be the largest oil development in Alaska since the 1990s, when the industry began a long slide in production. At peak, Willow could produce as much as 180,000 barrels of oil a day, a boost of about 40% over Alaska's current output. The North Slope Borough and many Arctic communities support the project, which would funnel millions of dollars to the region. Nationally, proponents of the project say it's a test of Biden's commitment to domestic oil production, which they say is better than acquiring oil from authoritarian regimes that have loose environmental regulations. Opponents say the project is incompatible with President Joe Biden's commitment to take meaningful action on climate change. Opposition is also strong in Nuiqsut, the community closest to where the drilling would occur. The Alaska Department of Natural Resources announced last week that Sty Mines has applied for a hard rock exploration permit along Keskenak Creek, southwest of the Pebble Deposit. The Sty Mines company, registered in Washington State, is proposing a multi-year hard rock exploration program, which would include 12 holes a year. The activity would start this year and continue through 2027. Sty Mines' primary owner is a company called Love and Above. Manager Greg Ellis has also worked as a screenwriter and a home developer in Washington State, according to his LinkedIn profile. A joint news release from the Bristol Bay Defense Fund cited the EPA's recent decision to veto mining at the Pebble Deposit. The coalition, which includes the United Tribes of Bristol Bay, Salmon State, and Katmai Services Provider, says the decades leading up to that decision show that Bristol Bay residents don't want mining in the region. Igeaguk Village President, Council President Alexana Salmon said they have always opposed mining along Keskenak Creek, which is the home of Igeaguk's ancient village sites and is important for subsistence hunting and fishing. She said the village council is counting on leaders in D.C. to enact protections for the entire watershed. The deadline for public comments on the Sty Mines application is March 14th. Alaska's congressional delegation has filed an amicus brief in a federal lawsuit that threatens to shut down salmon trolling in Southeast Alaska this summer. The brief is meant to be friendly guidance for the court, but at least one of Alaska's senators is not feeling especially friendly about the possible threat to an Alaskan way of life. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Lawyers for Senators Dan Sullivan and Lisa Murkowski and Representative Mary Peltola filed the brief on March 6th in the U.S. District Court of Western Washington. The lawsuit was brought 3 years ago by the Seattle-based Wild Fish Conservancy against the National Marine Fisheries Service. The conservancy argues that Southeast salmon trollers in Alaska intercept king salmon, crucial to the survival of an endangered population of killer whales in Puget Sound, in violation of the Endangered Species Act. The court is now considering whether or not to vacate the permit that allows the summer and winter troll fisheries in Alaska to operate, until the violation has been remedied. An amicus brief doesn't argue either side of the case, but is more like friendly advice to the court. During a recent visit to Rangel, however, Senator Dan Sullivan was not feeling very amicable toward the Wild Fish Conservancy.
This lawsuit is ridiculous. Think about what they're trying to do. Shut down this fishery. Estimates are that could impact Southeast by $100 million for orca problems in Puget Sound. They're not asking for the fishery in Puget Sound to be shut down. They're not asking about the pollution in Puget Sound. They're looking at shutting down our fishery here. Idiotic. And an abuse of the Endangered Species Act.
The amicus brief itself takes a more measured tone and suggests that the cure is worse than the disease. The National Marine Fisheries Service is already rewriting the 2019 biological opinion that the Wild Fish Conservancy first took issue with and is bringing it into line with the Endangered Species Act. NIMS is going to protect the killer whales. The amicus brief asks the court to protect the humans who've depended on this fishery for over a century. Or, to paraphrase the legalese, the harm that the vacatur would cause outweighs any deficiency in the incidental take statement because the asserted violation has been largely remedied by NIMS, and the economic impacts of the proposed remedy will be damning to an entire way of life that has existed for generations and will devastate the troll fishing communities of Southeast Alaska. A final report and recommendation on the matter is pending in front of U.S. District Court Judge Richard A. Jones. In addition to vacating the incidental take statement that allows king salmon trolling in Alaska, Jones will also decide whether or not to suspend a Washington hatchery program intended to make more prey available for the southern resident killer whales. Reporting in Sitka with help from Sage Smiley in Wrangell, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Two Western Aleutian volcanoes are showing signs of unrest, signaling the potential for an eruption in the coming days or weeks. Tanaga and Takawanga volcanoes are about 60 miles west of Adak. The Alaska Volcano Observatory reports that earthquake activity started increasing near Tanaga last weekend, with Takawanga following on Wednesday. Tim Orr is a geologist with the observatory and U.S. Geological Survey.
It certainly appears that there's magma moving at a shallow level beneath the volcanoes, but it's uncertain right now if they will erupt or which one will erupt.
Tanaga and Takawanga are 5 miles apart on uninhabited Tanaga Island. Orr says the observatory is monitoring the volcano's activity by satellite and through reports from people passing by.
Yeah, we don't really have eyes on the volcano except from space. And it's possible that people in the area, you know, mariners or pilots in the area might spot something happening and report it to us. We rely on a lot of different sources to determine whether a volcano has been erupting.
If the volcanoes erupt, Orr says ash fall would certainly affect air travel in the area. Just how much will depend on the wind. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, as many as 500 Iditarod spectators arriving in Nome may not have a place to stay.
I generally tell people that at this point they need to be calling the visitor center for help, finding space on somebody's couch or spare bedroom.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Grant applications are now being accepted for tribal justice grants through the U.S. Department of Justice. Coordinated Tribal Assistance Solicitation, or CETAS grants, fund tribal courts and tribal law enforcement, open to federally recognized tribes across Alaska. Applications are open until March 21st. Learn more at atjrc.org/CTAS. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tribal Justice Resource Center.
Two people were found dead yesterday afternoon at an Anchorage park. Anchorage police responding at about 3:15 p.m. to Russian Jack Springs Park found the bodies of two adults. Police investigators visited the park, but an initial statement didn't say whether the deaths are considered suspicious. The cause of death will be determined by the state medical examiner. And in Fairbanks, two people have been charged with a double murder in the city that happened last summer. According to a Fairbanks Police Department release, 20-year-olds Capri Willis and Joshua Bell are charged with the fatal shootings of 28-year-old Ricardo DePierre and 18-year-old Rachel Wright, whose bodies were found in a Birchwood Homes neighborhood apartment on August 7th of last year. Police say Bell and Willis were suspects, and during a recorded phone call, Bell identified himself and Willis as the killers and recounted what happened, information that led to the recovery last month of two handguns used in the murders. On February 27th, police say Bell spoke to a FPD officer posing as a hitman and agreed to pay $10,000 to have Willis killed and make it look like a suicide. Police say Bell wanted a suicide note to say he had nothing to do with the murders and was set up by Willis. Willis and Bell are both jailed on first-degree murder charges. Bell is also charged with evidence tampering and solicitation of murder. For about a month, Tulaksac has been without running water since a line leading from the community water plant broke, leaving the school and all the teacher housing without running water. As KYUK's Francisco Martinez-Cuello reports, help is on the way for Tulaksac School, but it's not clear when running water will be restored.
Governor Mike Dunleavy issued a disaster declaration on February 24th to activate the state's public assistance program to provide needed emergency response resources and disaster cost reimbursement. Jeremy Zydek is the public information officer at the state's Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management.
Our public assistance section has reached out to the school district and folks at the school, and we've completed our public assistance section application briefing with the community. They're now an applicant for our disaster recovery program. And we've also conducted an applicant briefing with the school and the school district.
The briefing provided an opportunity for community members to ask questions about reimbursement eligibility under the state's disaster recovery program and how they can work through that process. The school currently has about 3 500-gallon water tanks. One of the big challenges is the transfer of water between the plant and the school. Hauling water with only one vehicle takes a considerable amount of staff time. The vehicle is an aging pickup truck. The current weather conditions are also adding to the stress, according to Carrie Del Signore, the school principal.
We were a little concerned about being able to haul enough water. Just went on water conservation due to the fact that it was so icy. But our truck did not want to, we have to go up a ramp to get to the tanks. And our truck blew a tire last week, and so they had to replace that with an older tire, and then the truck itself, being two-wheel drive, just could not handle the ice and couldn't make it up the ramp.
Del Signore says they were able to put ice melt down and chop up some of the ice to haul water on Tuesday, March 8th, and have a fairly normal day with the kids at school. Relief is on its way, but it's difficult to know when.
We have a shipment on the way of shelf-stable food and drinking water, so hopefully we will receive that. That's coming by past mail. You never know out in the village when they'll actually deliver it, but it's on its way.
Zydek says the easy-to-prepare foods will help conserve water. The bottled water will be on hand in case the reverse osmosis treatment system is not able to keep up with demand. That system works better when more water is in the holding tanks. They are hauling water, so there are times when potable water production is less than optimal. YKHC and the Department of Environmental Conservation have been involved to ensure water is potable. There are a lot of costs associated with transporting water back and forth from the water plant to the school, purchasing additional holding tanks and pumps. While that will initially come out of the school's budget, emergency services funding should be there later.
That expense will be reimbursed through our disaster recovery program.
Another truck is also on its way.
We also are going to be receiving a truck that should be able to handle a larger tank so that we can haul more water and get it to the school, and the truck should be in much better shape. And like yesterday, we couldn't run the truck up and down the ramp because of the ice. And so hopefully the truck that's coming won't have a problem going up and down the ramp, and we'll be able to haul water all day.
Zydek says that the state will continue to work with the school, and he is aware that the ice road between Bethel and Tulaksac has been freezing and thawing, so sometimes bypass mail has to be used.
that exacerbates a situation. Obviously, it's easier just to drive down to Bethel, purchase supplies, and bring them back. And when you have to put that air leg in there, it complicates matters. But we're going to work with the school here.
Tuluksec's logistical complications are temporary and dependent on the weather. Until it is warm enough to gain access to the water line on the ground and fix the break, they will continue to haul water. In Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
Top teams in the Iditarod Trail sled dog race are more than halfway into the competition, running up the Yukon River. Some years, extreme wind or snow can turn that flat run into a monotonous marathon slog. But as Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan reports, this year, the hard, cold conditions are turning it into a fast, smooth ride.
The stretch of trail leading to the Yukon River has taken a toll on some dog teams. Last year's fourth-place finisher Dan Caduce compares the run from the checkpoints of Iditarod to Shagalak to being in a pinball machine. After taking his 8-hour break, he's hoping for a smoother run up the river.
We've had so much bumpy and hard on the joints of the dogs type trail coming into here that they could really use a nice flat trail for a couple of runs to get feeling good again.
As he evaluates his team, Caduce has been recalibrating his prospects.
I just am hoping to make it. I don't have any delusions of racing hard. I just want to see some tails wagging the rest of the way.
Luckily for him, reports from the Yukon are that conditions are smooth. About 45 miles farther down the trail in Grayling, Brent Sass is just pulling in. It's shortly before 10 a.m. on Friday.
Hello, Brent. Good to see ya.
He's the first musher here and receives a pair of hand-sewn beaver mitts from a local artisan.
Wow, this is amazing. Look over here. You made these?
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
As he pulls out a few supplies from the bag he shipped to the checkpoint, he says getting on the Yukon has been a relief.
Yeah, it's just beautiful. It's cold. It's finally winter out there.
Yes.
We've had such a warm race so far.
He's eager to get back out on the trail and take advantage of the near zero temperatures, which his dogs prefer to run in over the 20 and 30 degree weather that mushers have faced lately. In the cold, teams at the top of the field have sped up from 6 or 7 miles per hour during the warm early days of the race to now 8, 9, or even 10 miles per hour going down the Yukon. Kelly Maxner decided to stop and rest in Grayling in the afternoon as the sun starts to beat down and temperatures warm toward 20 degrees. After tossing patties of frozen ground beef to his dogs, he says it's been a nice run into the checkpoint.
It's pretty fast. It's slowed down a bit, but there's a breeze out there. It's really chilling things outside.
The river isn't only fast, it's also more straightforward. Mushers don't have to steer their sleds around corners or slow the teams down hills. Maxner said that's let his sore back get some rest.
Oh, it was nice because I could sit down. I haven't been able to do much sitting down. It's been kind of a rough trail.
Other mushers, too, have stopped to wait out the heat of the day. The vibe in the dockyard is collegial. There's some lighthearted trash talking between Maxner and Matt Fahler, who arrived shortly before Maxner.
That's what I was thinking about as he passed me. Matt Fahler's an idiot.
Fahler isn't tempted, though.
Kelly Maxner is a gentleman and a scholar. He's one of the nicest guys on the trail, and he even gave me Fig Newtons in passing.
I will say that Matt is one of the best trail dancers we have out there.
The friendly atmosphere on the trail continues as local school children gather around the dog yard to ask questions to the mushers. The checkpoints on the southern route of the Iditarod, Grayling included, haven't seen the race come through since 2019, and the town feels excited. Still, some teams opt to charge down the trail and take advantage of the fast snow before it gets too soft. Jesse Holmes arrives around 2 p.m.
Howdy, how's it going?
Hi, Jesse.
He's all business as he grabs bags of meat for his dogs to take down the trail.
Anybody leave here yet?
Yes.
Holmes grabs his phone, snaps a photo of the timesheet, and speeds off down the Yukon River Highway. With help from Ben Matheson and Shagluck, I'm Lex Trinan in Grayling.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you. The greatest compliment to a public media station is when a listener becomes a member. So do your part today by becoming a part of the team officially. Thank you for making a donation. Public media loves being part of your day. Thank you for listening and for your support.
A University of Alaska Fairbanks cross-country skier won an NCAA championship yesterday. UAF sophomore Joe Davies of Canmore, Alberta, finished first in the men's 10-kilometer skate technique race in Lake Placid, New York. Davies bested the field of the nation's best collegiate skiers by 25 seconds. According to a UAF release, it's the first time a Nanook man has won a national championship in skate technique and the first individual UAF win at the NCAA championship since 2008. Other Nanook skiers also raced well yesterday at NCAA. Mike Opoff took fifth, joining Davies as a first-team All-American, while on the women's side, Marielle Pullis and Kendall Kramer finished sixth and seventh, earning second-team All-American honors. As of yesterday, UAF was the top men's Nordic team, while the Nanook women were in third place. Cross-country skiers have today off, but return to the trails at Mount Van Hovenberg tomorrow for NCAA Championship Classic Technique races. As Iditarod mushers traverse the 1,000-mile trail, there is some concern about where visitors to the finish line in Nome will stay over the next 2 weeks. KNOM's Greg Knight reports on how limited accommodations are with one less hotel than last year.
Space could be short for visitors to the Iditarod finish in Nome. City Manager Glenn Steckman says as many as 500 visitors could be in Nome for the finish of the race. He explained what the city could expect in terms of visitors, both from race participants and spectators.
We anticipate at least 500 plus more people will be in the city, and obviously not everybody will be in the city for a week because, you know, people will come and go, but it's a consistent number that will be impacting the city during the 10-day to 2-week period.
Nome is short a whole lot of hotel beds due to a fire that put the Nome Nugget Hotel out of business during Typhoon Murbach. An earlier fire destroyed the Polaris Hotel in October 2017, and there was never a new one built. There are no plans to reopen the Nugget. That is leading to concern over where people will stay during Iditarod. Steckman says the Chamber of Commerce was asked to conduct outreach on the issue, and that there are several bed and breakfast businesses in the community.
We went and encouraged the chamber to reach out to the community to see if there were a number of people that might be willing to rent their houses out, as has been done in the past, to provide additional housing. There's also housing that has been converted to bed and breakfasts over the past few years.
Even though there are two hotels and eight bed and breakfasts open during the Iditarod, the hotels are full, and only two B&Bs said they even had partial availability for no more than 2 or 3 days maximum in the middle of March. Beyond the Iditarod, the temporary housing situation is dire enough during March that Bering Straits Regional Housing Authority President Jolene Lyon won't even schedule in-town board meetings during the month.
There are so many things going on, and we're not the only entity in town that has a board. And so, you know, we try to plan well in advance, but for the most part, I just try not to have a board meeting in the month of March.
Miranda Music owns the Golden Sands Bed and Breakfast in Nome. She says her business started getting full for Iditarod months ago.
I start booking out 6 months in advance, and so I was starting to get bookings as soon as my calendar opened up.
Another bed and breakfast, the Noxapaga Inn, is owned by Jessica Farley. She says visitors who haven't yet found a place should reach out to the visitor center in Nome.
I generally tell people that at this point they need to be calling the visitor center for help, finding space on somebody's couch or spare bedroom. We're 100% occupancy, but we generally book out about 6 months before the race, and it was the same this year as it was last year.
Paul Costo is the director of the Nome Chamber of Commerce. He says one way or another, everyone who comes to Nome for the race's finish finds somewhere to lay their head.
Somehow or another, the folks in Nome seem to accommodate all the visitors that want to come for Iditarod.
They open up their homes. They make room underneath the dining room table. They shuffle kids into one room and make available for another room. Many people actually sign up and host visitors and mushers and their team of helpers.
More information about the Nome Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center can be found at visitnomealaska.com. Reporting in Nome, I'm Greg Knight.
Anchorage resident Maureen Loopstra turned 100 on Tuesday, but the next morning she made sure to keep to her exercise routine. Alaska Public Media's Alyssa Lachlan brings us the story of a 100-year-old's key to a long, healthy life.
On the second day of her 100th year, Maureen Loopstra did what she does every Wednesday, water aerobics at the Lake Otis YMCA.
No, I come every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday and do an hour of water aerobics, and then come in here and yak. That's what Y stands for, yakking.
That's the Y in YMCA, where Loopstra has been a member since the first day it opened almost 60 years ago. Other side. Yes. Jackie Young Tucker is the instructor for the 10 a.m. water aerobics class. She teaches every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and her class has more than 50 regulars, mostly older Alaskans. Young Tucker has been a water aerobics instructor at the Y since 1993.
Maureen has been in my class before I even started. So I've been teaching over 30 years, and I have just had some of the greatest people. Our working out is very, very important to us, but I feel like our social time and our fellowship is just as important in keeping our mind, body, and spirit and everything working together.
The 10 a.m. water aerobics class is a tight-knit group. Another regular, Bob Wall, acts as the group's secretary and keeps a phone list of his 50-plus classmates who come consistently. He checks in on people if they don't show up to class to make sure they're okay.
Most people will come and tell me when they're going on vacation because they know I'm going to be calling.
Several class members spoke about how important their friends at the Y are to them. After their hour-long exercise, they gather in the lounge, which is named after Maureen, to drink coffee and yak. They credit exercise and socialization in keeping them healthy. Loopstra agrees. She shares her secret to longevity.
Keep moving and upbeat people.
It's even written on her birthday cake. Just keep moving and surround yourself with friends. In Anchorage, I'm Alyssa Lachlan.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Izzy Ross in Dillingham, Rob Woolsey in Sitka, Sophia Stewart Rossi in Unalaska, Chris Clint and Alyssa Longland in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Francisco Martinez Cuello in Bethel, Lex Trinan and Beth Matheson on the Iditarod Trail, and Greg Knight in Nome. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us, news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. Tim Rocky is our producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. There are many ways to support your local public media station. Donate now and arrange to make a planned gift as a bequest. Your legacy will stretch from today to many tomorrows. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.